Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
This Monday, August 7th, the Vail Dance Festival comes to you. Don't miss the live stream of Monday's Now Premieres program at 7:30 p.m. Mountain Time, 9:30 p.m. Eastern. Visit veildance.org to enjoy an evening of world premieres from the festival's all-star casts of choreographers and dancers. You have heard them all right here on Conversations on Dance. Now catch them live from the Vail Dance Festival stage on Monday, August 7th. Link in the description of this episode for more information. This episode was recorded live at the Manor Vail Lodge. Conversations on Dance at the Vail Dance Festival is generously underwritten by the Town of Vail. I'm Rebecca King Ferraro.
And I'm Michael Sean Breeden, and you're listening to Conversations on Dance. Good morning, everyone, and welcome to Conversations on Dance here at the Vail Dance Festival. My name is Michael Sean Breeden, and I am your host today. We are so lucky to be joined by two wonderful choreographers here at the festival, Kylie Kwan and Jamar Roberts. Thank you both for coming out early this morning to talk to me. And I've been lucky enough to have you both on before, but we always like to kind of circle back to the beginning a little bit for anyone that might not have heard those earlier podcast episodes. And I think hearing a little bit about your individual performing careers and how that informs the work you do as choreographers now would be a great place to start. So maybe let's go with Kylie.
Yeah, of course. So I grew up on Guam. I started dancing, kind of a little bit of everything. And then I moved to New York when I was 16. I got into Ballet Academy East and eventually found myself at Ballet X for 8 seasons. And I retired in August of 2020 and immediately started choreographing virtually. And that's kind of my career in a nutshell.
And you know, you're only retired-ish.
Right.
We will get to see you dance this year.
That's correct. It's crazy.
We'll get back to that in a second. But Jamar, tell us a little bit about your own performing career.
Yeah, I am originally from Miami, Florida. I graduated from New World School of the Arts. Right after graduation, I went to the Ailey School and then Ailey 2 and then the Alvin Ailey American Dance Theater, which is the main company. I was there for a big 18 years. In between, I took a bit of a hiatus. I did some other things, danced with Complexions Contemporary Ballet for 1 season, went back to Ailey, and stayed there for a while, and retired, I don't know, how old am I? I retired probably 3 years ago, technically. I still noodle around a little bit, but I'm just a freelance choreographer mainly now.
So at what point in your respective dance careers did you start to create works as well, in addition to your own performing duties?
Yeah, I started to make work when I was dancing with Ballet X. Christine was really gracious in terms of choreography. I kind of just emailed her and I was like, I'd love to try making work. And she was like, how about in 3 weeks? Which was incredible. So that's kind of when I started playing pretty much when I was dancing with Ballet X, maybe in 2016.
Right. How about for you, Jamar?
Yeah, very similarly. I started, I guess, taking choreography seriously and making actual pieces when I was dancing with Ailey as a dancer. I don't know what year that was. I had a lot of experience before that. I went to a small dance studio in Miami before I moved to New York, and I had a teacher there that would just let me choreograph any and everything, and she would just let me have the studio by myself to just kind of play around. So I already had a couple, I guess, some chops like mm-hmm. under my belt, but they really weren't very refined until much later on.
Right. So, I mean, both of these companies have very specific traditions or identities. So, like, for Ballet X, you know, Christine is just, I think she said you do it, we're doing at least six commissions. It's new, totally new ballets a year, up to nine. So you're getting fed this constant diet of new. I'm wondering how that impacted your own work as a choreographer. What were you taking from these choreographers? Was there any individual creator that really spoke to you, or, you know, how are you finding your own voice among so many voices that you're constantly working with?
Yeah, I think I was very fortunate to work with so many different kind of choreographers that had very different processes, and I think I kind of pulled from each in terms of what I wanted to create in a space while I was creating. I think about that quite a lot in terms of the process for the dancers. But I have many favorites. I think Matthew Neenan is a huge, huge inspiration of mine, and I loved being in the work that he created, and I felt all of his works, I felt the most like myself, which I really try to take with me when I create, try to give the dancer, allow them to contribute a part of their identity into work that I make.
Mm-hmm. You know, when I think of Maddie, he's such a wonderful person, and I've never had the chance to work with him as a dancer, but I know that in the studio he just creates such a comfortable environment, and how much does that affect the work you're doing too? Like, obviously that's something you just like emanate warmth and security to your dancers as well. Like, how important is that for the creative process?
I think it really helps to kind of create an open space. I've kind of been a part of both types of creative paths for makers, and I've been a part of the one where this is the step, which also has its benefits, right? Mm-hmm. That's when I learn the most. But when the space is kind of open and you're free to make different choices, choreographer kind of asks, like, what do you want to do next? You kind of can organically find movement in a way that I could never make myself in a studio. I really love trying to trace that path of where it can go. But yeah, I feel like the open creative studio where it feels like the roof is open, the sun is shining in, I feel like is my favorite kind of space to create.
Right. So Jamar, for Ailey, it's a different story. It's not so many voices in there. There are of course other choreographers, but you know it's like Balanchine at City Ballet or Martha for Graham. You have this titan kind of leading the way. How does mm-hmm. that shape your voice in a way that's different from maybe being a little bit more balanced in terms of the choreographic voices?
I don't know. I always saw myself as a bit of an anomaly in the company. I think, I don't know why, but it's always felt that way to me. Oftentimes being in the studio and like being exposed to so many different choreographers and the rep being so large, one of my biggest takeaways was always craft. Like, I'm really into trying to figure out how things are made. That's all. That's all I got for that answer. Hold on, let me see if there's any more in there.
Well, don't worry, I'm here all day. We'll pull it up.
Okay, cool.
No, I think actually this is a good time. We're already talking about like environment and the creative process. So maybe we can delve into what that means for each of you individually. You know, something I think that's interesting about choreography is that for basically any other art, you don't need humans. You know, a violin isn't going to talk back to you. You know, your paints aren't going to get tired. So what are, I guess, like pros and cons of that? Like, what's it like needing your materials to be human?
Jamar.
Well,
or maybe, you know, something that kind of goes hand in hand with this is how much are you relying on the other people? Like, I know a lot of choreographers will do some phrases on their own bodies before, especially since you were both very distinguished dancers. Is that something you still like to do? Or when you come in, is it more based on, like I was saying, the materials you have, the people that are going to be in your work that
time? Yeah, for me, I think it's both. There's a bunch of research that I do before I go in and make the work. And a lot of that research is on my own body and within my own, you know, mind and thinking process. And then once I get there, it's like, I want to keep that and I want to hold on to that, but I also have to take advantage of the energies and the artists that are in the room and not sort of hold so tightly onto what I've constructed outside of the room and sort of let the dancers kind of color and shape the rest of the work. So it's very collaborative in that way, I think.
Right. How about for you,
Kylie? Yeah, very, very similar to Jamar. I study the music like backwards and forwards, and I try to figure out what it feels like on my body. I think that's really important to physically express what I think it feels like, if that makes sense. But, you know, my body has limitations, and I think, especially working with these insanely talented ballet dancers who I, you know, if I could do 1% of what they can do, it would be a successful day. But I feel like getting into the studio and get, they contribute so much,
right,
so much to the work. So I have an idea, and I understand the music, and I translate what I want the music to feel like, and then they do the rest. I try to follow what their bodies naturally lean in towards.
Right. Let's talk about music for a second and what your relationship to it is as a choreographer. Like, what do you find to be danceable music? Are there certain, like, what are we drawn to? Are there certain things that you would never want to choreograph to? I mean, Jamar, so for instance, you're using Philip Glass on Monday, and then the work you did at City Ballet was this wildly jazzy, very different beast. So obviously you have a range of musical tastes, but what defines danceable music for you?
I think for me, it's completely open. It can be a kid banging on a table with a fork, or it can be like a huge, beautiful orchestration.
Yeah.
Because I think for me, it's a couple different parts, but there's the conceptual side, and then there's the side that helps color the concept. Do you know what I mean? So it just depends on what I'm making the dance about and what it is that I want to say. And I think after that, I sort of find music that helps push that narrative along.
Right. Kylie, I think you have a commissioned piece of music, right, this year?
I do.
So it's a whole other thing. Can you talk about that? Like, how much with this work, let's say, back and forth is there? Or is it just kind of, here's what you got and make it work?
Yeah. So, this year, the composer of the trio that I'm working on is, his name is Gabriel Kahane, and he made a, original composition for Brooklyn Rider to play. And I think the beautiful part of it is he's very close with Brooklyn Rider, and he knows each musician quite well. So he created a work kind of knowing their strengths and who they are as people, which I thought was really beautiful. So in this case, I had like the MIDI version of the track pretty early on. And I kind of started this. It's a difficult score for me. There are parts of really beautiful melody, and then he dives into this deepness and then kind of goes back and forth between the two. So this one wasn't too much of a collaborative process. However, I have been on the phone with Gabe quite a lot, asking him how he hears the rhythm in the music. Right. And also I spoke to him a lot about his intention behind it before I started creating the work to see kind of what he was thinking. So it's been collaborative in a different sense.
Right.
Last year when I did the collaboration with Caroline Shaw, it was very collaborative, which was cool. Right. But in this case, it was nice because I had the music beforehand. So it's like, there's pros and cons to both sides, I think.
Have either of you ever asked a composer to alter something dramatically or cut entirely?
I haven't.
So these are who we want to work with if we're writing music. Because I've heard some stories about others, but we won't bring up tawdry gossip on a Saturday morning. But what's your you mentioned concept. I mean, how does that come in? Like, what's the order of things? Do we get a piece of music and then a concept comes to your mind, or you know, when we're thinking longer term for our works, like how, what's the process that you typically go through from seed of an idea of what you want to do to stage? Let me start with Jamar.
Yeah, I get this question a lot. It's different every time.
Okay.
Oftentimes I start with like writing, just kind of like a free write of what, just dumping out any content, you know, that's in my mind, like putting it onto paper. So sometimes it starts that way. Sometimes it does start with the music. But for me, I think as a dance maker, I'm really good with vocabulary. I can throw out tons of steps all day, no problem. But my weakness, or I would say the area that I wish I were stronger in, is building concepts and like ideas and narratives. And so for me, lately, I've been kind of starting with those places just so that I have the most time with them. And I can kind of work on it as much as I can. So it's been like concept for me now, cool. These days.
Let's see. I guess I feel like some days the steps flow and sometimes they don't, to be completely honest. I feel like, you know, I feel like I have so many more years of creating and trying to figure out hone the craft and figure it out. But I feel, you know, I get the music, I find great music that I want to make dances to, and then I go for a really long walk and I listen on repeat over and over and over and over. And then when I get tired, one more time over and over again. And I try to digest it that way. I feel like that time, once I understand the DNA of the music, it helps me make steps faster and more organically, if that makes sense. I've been really pushing, trying to find emotional tones on all types of music that I've been using, you know. I've been trying to work out creating to classical music quite a lot, and that's what I've been working on lately, dances to classical music.
So you both already talked about ways that you're pushing yourself to grow as a choreographer, but something else that I think about a lot is when we're dancing, you have constant feedback, you know, near constant feedback of, you know, from your coach or from a stager or from a choreographer or a teacher, or from a peer. But as a choreographer, it's a little more solitary pursuit. Do you ever seek out advice, or is there a place you feel comfortable getting feedback that maybe is not so commonplace in your field?
This is something I always think about. I feel like there should be a support group or a hotline or something for choreographers. Because it's so... the industry kind of moves so fast, and you know, it's really hard to sort of, even sometimes if you're on the same program with another choreographer, it's just kind of like ships in the night. You're just like, hey, yeah, see you after the show. But it's hard work. And what do? I don't know. I guess I'm pretty self-aware in a sense. It's sort of like I know what I'm aiming for, so I always know when I'm off. Mm-hmm. And depending on the resources that I have, one of the main resources being time, I can kind of gauge, okay, I'm in this crunchy spot, but I only have 2 days left. What do I do? This becomes really stressful, but you have to make a decision. And sometimes I make the wrong decision, and I just go anyway, and I just kind of like deal with that within my own self. And I, but there isn't really one person that I go to. A lot of people say that like the artist life is like a really lonely life, and I've definitely experienced that because there are situations like the one I just described where you're just in, you're just, your back is against the wall in a sense, and if you don't have a lot of other peers like that choreograph, then you can't really have a conversation. You just kind of have to like sit with it and figure out how to not be in that situation again. And that process can be, it can take a long time. It can be short, but for me, it's just always really difficult. But I think with time, it just kind of goes away, and you kind of figure out, you know, where it went wrong or where it went right. Mm-hmm. But it sucks.
Yeah, it's brutal. Mm-hmm. And yeah. I feel like the support group, I feel like, is key. Yeah,
we should make one.
Yeah, you know, especially here in Vail, like there's so many works being made, and I haven't seen anyone's work. I haven't seen anybody. I don't know. You know, the process is brutal, but it's really beautiful at the same time.
Yeah, I see. I was going to ask. I think that, you know, Vail is probably not unique entirely, but it is a place. I mean, how many premieres are on Monday? I think 9. You know, so you have 9 different choreographers creating work, and so you are in a situation where you are actually around peers, your contemporaries. But I guess it's not much of a support group after all, because you're just going back to the hotel room and figuring out your accounts for tomorrow,
or you gotta have a break as well.
Yeah, so
decompress. Yeah, I gave Kyle a hug. I saw Kyle
That's
for
it.
Like 3
oh, yeah,
minutes.
I'm hugging everybody.
Yeah.
The whole time.
Yeah, it's you know what I like to do? I like to actually hang out with my family. That helps me. And do something completely not process related.
Right.
Yeah. That space helps. I have a daughter, and I just stare at her and hold her for a little bit. But I think, you know, chatting with my sister and talking about something completely not dance related, I think that like breath lets me dive back in again so I can become obsessed.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If, only in theaters May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news? All right, I'll do. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us.
MintMobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 531.24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
Yeah.
You know, something else that entirely different from what we experienced as dancers. You know, when you're a dancer, you're attached to a company and you have the rep picked for you and you know that the work is there. But for being a freelance choreographer, is there an element of selling yourself that you have to do in order to achieve new commissions? Which, again, is usually like so against the grain of a dancer. There's nothing more disturbing than having to be like, I'm good at this thing, right?
Yeah.
So what's that component like for you guys?
Well, these days it feels like there's an element of selling yourself that you should do. Mm-hmm. Somehow this should feels very imposing and very like prevalent. I'm terrible at it. I just like to say I let the work speak for itself, but it doesn't feel like that's enough these days sometimes, like with the advent of social media and all these things. But it just seems like I just don't have that entrepreneurial spirit. Mm-hmm. And I'm okay with that. Sometimes I get pressure from other people saying, oh, you should, you know, be choreographing for the VMAs, this kind of thing. Like, put yourself out there. And it's just not my, it's not my bag.
And that's okay.
But I do it in my own way.
You're doing just fine.
Thank you.
You're killing it, Jamar. Yeah. Social media is really tough. I feel like I'm, in terms of the age, right between. And I love my personal life too, you know? I think I want to keep it for myself.
Can't give it all the way to the,
exactly.
to the gram.
Yeah. And you know, my personal life is so boring too. So, you know, I think I try my best to create work that I love and to create processes that the dancers enjoy. And I hope that's enough. You know, I be as kind and warm as possible, and fingers crossed it works out.
Yeah, creating work that you love. I think that's because when you make something that you love, you feel more compelled to share. So maybe that's an honest way of self-promotion.
Yeah, it's true.
So let's talk about Veil some. What was the first year each one of you came to the festival, and what were those circumstances?
Oh, I think the first year was 2014. I think so, with Ballet X. Mm-hmm. First time coming here, and we did a new work by Matthew Neenan, and it was a really chill Veil year, Veil summer, where I think we just did like three things, and I just remember taking lots of naps to try to adjust to the altitude. but that was the first experience, and I was like, unbelievable. The whole time, I think I was pretty shocked. I was like, what are we doing here? This is the best dancers on the planet. it was pretty inspiring.
How about for you, Jamar?
I don't remember the year, but it was definitely like in my early career dancing with Ailey. We were here, you know, doing parts of Revelations and some other small solos and duos from the rep. And I just remember being really cold and just dancing Center Man with my shirt off, and it was cold and it was wet. It was exhilarating because I always like dancing outside, especially if the piece has like a run in it and you can like feel the like
the wind
on your body. But it was just like a whirlwind for me. It was like I was in some type of dance wonderland that I couldn't quite understand in the moment. And then shortly after, you know, we left. So
yeah, it's a little bit of a different experience creating than dancing here. How have we found that to be? You don't have to worry about dancing in, you know, like upper 40s temps shirtless anymore. So.
Right. Yeah. It's tough to dance here. It's amazing. I feel like it's super mental because you know it's going to be hard no matter what. It's going to be hard. And I do remember seeing more dancer's breath that first year. Now it's much warmer.
Yeah.
But yeah, dancing here is... It's no joke, really. But you come down to sea level and you feel like a superhero for like 24 hours. That's
I'm really
hard.
Excited for that.
Yeah. Really energetic. Yeah.
So what are we working on this year at the Veil Dance Festival? Kylie already mentioned that you will be dancing. I got to see a run through, the first run through, I believe, of Justin Peck's new work,
yeah.
Which I just loved. How's that been for you?
Oh my gosh. I'm still in shock that I'm in that piece with those glorious dancers and with Justin. It's been incredible. You know, as I said, I retired from dancing full time in 2020, so the opportunity to watch Justin's process has been such a gift. I think he's just incredibly talented in terms of him seeing the micro and the macro, like, with such ease back and forth. He has a whole vision and then sees details very clearly. But yeah, never in my life. I thank you, Damien and Heather. but it's been nice to dance again, to move in space.
Yeah. How does that inspire your own work? I mean, I remember Justin saying that, telling me once that he was never going to not dance because he couldn't imagine inspiration coming just mentally. Like, you want to feel it on your own body still. So how does that, like, you're in this piece, how does that go back and in some way inform what you're doing while you're creating still?
Yeah, you know, I think it's just another dose of perspective. It's nice to work with Justin and then go back to the studio and then dive in and become obsessed again with my piece. I just think it's like a a breath of fresh air, you know, to focus on it, to be in a studio and just focus on my own body. It's nice to go back and forth.
Yeah. So what's your new piece looking like this year? Who are you working with dancer-wise? What's the music? Yeah. We talked about the music. We're there.
Yeah.
So yeah. Who will we be seeing in your ballet?
Calvin, Unity, and Olivia Bell. It's a trio. And they're really, really beautiful. I always wish I had more time. Every time, like, just a little bit more time to just hang out and play. But, you know, the great thing about Vail is it's so fresh. And there's something very special about that, being performed in a place where it's not going to peak too early. And it's almost like, what's going to happen? You know, which is makes it very exciting.
Okay, that's an interesting idea that I've heard a little bit about from other choreographers, that peaking too early. I've been a part of processes, too, where I'm assisting a choreographer where they're so nervous that everything is going so well. It's like, we have 3 weeks, and why am I going so fast? And then, and now it's done, and I have to look at it for the next 2 weeks. And oh God, like what? Like is that something that ever happens to you guys? Or where do you feel like you fall on that spectrum in terms of like getting it done quickly or last minute?
It seems like there's an arc that happens where I start and it's like great because everything I've prepared I bring into the beginning of the process and it's flowing, and then everything turns into a disaster like halfway through, and I think I'm not gonna have enough time. I think like everything I made is crap. The dancers are like working their butts off and I'm like, I see you, I feel you, but everything's not working. And then at some point at the 11th hour, like the last minute, it just like appears.
Right.
And it's like, I know that's gonna happen every time, but every time I'm always surprised that like, here I am again. Like.
So what point are we at for your Monday premiere?
Oh, I've gone through all of that.
Okay, yeah. We're
smooth sailing.
Can we talk a little bit about the ballet we'll be seeing on Monday?
Monday is the 5th.
Seventh.
The seventh. That's
today
that's
the fifth.
That's ballet.
You have a work coming tonight as well, right? is tonight also a premiere or is something?
Tonight's a premiere, but it was also something that Damien and Heather just kind of said, "Would you like to do this?" It was like a last minute thing that kind of happened a couple days before I got here. It's a trio of three women. It's Aji, India, and Olivia Bell.
Did we hear Audrey's name just elicit gasps? I think anyone that was in the room last night saw Audrey do White Swan, and it's just White Swan Potada. It was so bonkers. So
yeah.
I think we're all chomping at the bit to get more Audrey in
quite,
our lives.
Quite
so.
Special. And the music is sang by Devon Tynes. Mm-hmm. It's called, I should be able to just pull this out easier, Songs to the Dark Virgin. It was a poem written by Langston Hughes and I guess composed by female African-American composer Florence Price. It's really short. It's really beautiful. Working with them was really cool. Mm-hmm. I've never did a trio of women. I've never worked with three women in a room like that. So I don't know. It was really, really awesome. And we all knew that we had to wrap this thing up. So like this feeling of like, yeah, like it was really collaboratory, I suppose. Mm-hmm. But on, what's that day?
Monday, August
Monday,
7th.
I made a work on Ballet X about, I would say like a little bit over a month ago. This is my second piece that I've made on them for the Vail Festival. The last one was in 2021. What is this piece? It's music by Philip Glass. He made an album called Annunciation, and I just kind of took one of the first movements of that, played by Brooklyn Rider, and made this piece called Eros and Psyche. It's sort of inspired by those two Greek gods, and one was the god of love, the other one is was the personification of the soul or the spirit or the mind, and I just kind of like took those two characteristics and tried to make a dance about it, about the feeling of like like body and like heart and soul coming together. This like, we all know what that feels.
Right. Well, as usual, Now Premieres is going to be a real highlight of the festival. I know all of us are super psyched to see it. But we have, I think, a little bit of time to open the floor to audience questions. And per usual, we will be passing around the mic.
Turn my head in the other.
Anyone? Right here.
What I heard earlier is that music, and this is great to understand, that music informs this, I believe, music informs the story that you each choose to tell through your work. But then you mentioned you hear all these words come and phrases come out, you put them on paper, and then you look for music. So is it a sometimes one way and sometimes the other way, or is it just different for each choreographer, or would you say most choreographers, it's a 50-50 kind of thing?
Definitely different for each choreographer. For me, it depends. Sometimes it's music first, sometimes it's concept first. Sometimes it's an image or a piece of fabric that I saw in a fabric store, and I just start swinging around and it creates, you know, some ideas in my mind, and then, you know, that turns into a piece, but it's different every time.
Yeah, you know, I think for me, most of the time it's music first, but I choreographed a piece for Ballet X called Love Letter that's going to be performed at the Villar tomorrow night. And I knew that was a piece that was going to be inspired by Guam and the culture that I grew up in. And when I found out about that commission, I made an 8-hour playlist of songs that inspired me from home, you know? So I think it goes either way. I think also inspiration can really come from anything. Mm-hmm. It's crazy when it falls and you just never know when it happens. So I guess both.
I'm just thinking of Justin said that verbatim yesterday, kind of in a jokey way, because he was saying something. What was the analogy or the metaphor? It was something about a melon.
Oh yeah, the melon that they were serving at dinner the other night, right? Cutting a melon in half.
Inspiration can be can come from anything, can be from anywhere. So I'm wondering, like you mentioned, a piece of fabric. I'd love to maybe just know like a couple other things that like we might not imagine to be inspiring. What's something that's made it into your piece that is specifically, I don't know, pedestrian or strange or unexpected?
There's this one comedian on Instagram. She's a young woman, but she dresses up like an old woman, and she does like funny dances and makes jokes and stuff. And she did a dance once that I don't know, I put it into a piece, but I had no plans on doing it. And I don't even think the dancers know now to this day. And there's also, I use this image a lot if I'm trying to like get a move to be less sharp or less aggressive or speak a little bit or more sensual. And I always say like, imagine that you have like a cappuccino or like a coffee drink that has the foam on the top, and you put the sugar on top of the foam, and like the way that the sugar like sinks into the foam like that. That one I love, and it always works every time.
That's great.
Well, that's good.
Right? Feel it?
Very, very, absolutely. All of a sudden I was like.
Yeah, use it. You're free to use it anytime you want.
Yeah, you know, it's funny what makes it into works. Sometimes you're just having a conversation and it's just circumstantial, and you're like, oh. So let's say I was doing a piece for Sacramento Ballet in the spring, and one of my very good friends, Colby Damon, works for Sacramento Ballet now, and we're just kind of chatting. And he's a big fan of Boys to Men, can like sing the whole album like front to back. It's fantastic. So one of the sections was like an all men section, and it was like very much Boys to Men that just like naturally like creeped into the choreo. Yeah, you know, I think the more normal things that creep into the work, I feel like the more human it is, the more present it is. But man, that cappuccino one is really good.
It's yours.
Anyone else with who's got the mic? Yeah.
You guys are great. I've seen both your works many times. Are you, how are you impacted or ignore reviews?
Very good question.
Oh. I've had a lot of them. It's like first they were great, and then they got not as great. And when the shift happened, I don't know, I think it was a really good reality check for me. It was a really humbling moment. I used to pay attention to them because they were good. Why wouldn't I? but now I've sort of let it go. I think that there's a certain amount of, once again, like self-awareness. Like there's a certain amount of like, you kind of have to believe in yourself and what it is that you're doing in a very serious way so that no matter what anyone says, you kind of know, you know, your tunnel vision, like you're extremely focused on like what it is that you're wanting to put out into the world. And so I kind of like, kind of let reviews go. I don't do them anymore, unless they have nice photos. And I'll just like somehow try to keep the photo and then throw the rest away.
I love that. You know, I think choreographing is such like a deeply personal experience. I think it's more personal than dancing, or like reveals more than dancing sometimes. I haven't been reviewed too much, but I try not to read it because I feel it's basically like I break off a piece of my heart and like put it on display for a bit. So I try not to read reviews. Yeah, I think I'm gonna make a dance, and if you don't like it, I'm sorry. And if you like it, great. You know, I think that's a healthy perspective.
Yeah, I read it when someone says, "Did you see that review?" And then I'll read it. Otherwise, I'm not looking for them.
Right. Yeah, you know, being critiqued is tough. Being critiqued on something that you've made out of nothing is hard. It's hard.
Yeah, I agree.
Next question.
Great. Jamar, I'd like to ask you, personally, John Lewis is one of my heroes, and I know that you choreographed a tribute to him at the March on Washington Film Festival. Could you talk a little bit not only about what went into the concept in your choreography, but also emotionally what it was like to do that?
First of all, I'm glad that you saw that little film that I made. That's really, I didn't know how many people saw it, but it was really special to make, and I was really glad that I got the invitation to make it. And I wish that I had been able to dance for him when he was still alive, because that was the original intention. It's a really strange thing when you're making a film in film editing, because you make it in pieces, and you don't really see the whole thing play out until, you know, it's all finished. But I really saw him, and I'm sure many do, like as a hero. And so I really wanted to, within that piece, show the trajectory of like a person sort of like being on the ground is really how I started in the film, but like just having to like push through so much adversity and then sort of making it to the top. And so by the end of that film, I just really wanted to like show this like really graceful hero, you know, not the one that kind of like flies around, but the one that has like this real sort of like dignity and like pride and like knows everything that came before that got him to where he is there, where he is now. So yeah, thank you.
So I first have a suggestion from what I've been hearing, which is hopefully next year, with all of the choreographers that come to the festival, that there's a room set aside and a time set aside, maybe 1 hour out of all the craziness, where the choreographers can sit in a room together and talk about their processes and maybe exchange contact information so they have a network.
I think that's a really great idea, but I think for like the nothing will be said. Only because we're so used to dealing with it in our own ways. And so either it will be like, I don't know, I imagine it'll be like a really sort of like quiet environment, or it'll just be like a mess. It's like tears and dancing. And then, but I think they could both work.
I do have one question,
yeah.
And it might be a naive question, but I know that freelance dancers may have agents. Could choreographers have agents?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, I don't.
So it is possible.
I don't have one, but yes, it's most choreographers have an agent, I feel like.
I didn't have one for a very long time. Only recently got one, and that's only because she was a friend of mine that just happened to start, representing artists. But I think that they are. It's a bit of it's a niche, so they can be hard to find, especially if the work you want to make is not like commercial, like Nikes and stuff like that. They have huge agencies for those, but the other ones I think are a bit hard to find, and sometimes they find you. But yes, they do exist.
Yeah, but going back to the choreography, I feel like if we could share one meal in Vail together, I think that would be fun.
I agree.
But I can see the tears and the dance and the.
I'm just dramatic up here in my brain, but I think the spectrum of what could happen in that room.
There is large.
Large.
It's large.
At least exchange information.
Yeah.
So let's go to the next question.
Just to expand on this theme, and thinking about the comparison to writers, you talked about the lack of a critique group when you're building a piece, and then reviews at the other end. And are there the equivalent of editors? Are there, like when you're doing a work like for Vail, do people like Damien and Heather say, this is working, this isn't working, or do they just leave it to you? Do you get feedback from the dancers when they're done? Can you, you tell how they responded to the piece? And do you sense how the audience responds? There are many stages between the beginning and the review, and so I'm just kind of how you process that feedback, and even if people don't seem to be responding, you still feel, well, I did what I wanted to do, and I'm satisfied with it.
Yeah, I think here in Vail, it's very, very fast process. I feel like by the time we see the works, I think I don't see everyone's work until maybe the day of when we're kind of teching in the theater. Mm. But in terms of feedback, let's see. Sometimes the dancers, it's tough because they're executing the steps, so they don't have they're doing it. So it's hard for them to say. They can tell me what it feels like, which is helpful. Because sometimes it's too much, mm-hmm. right? When they're like, okay, maybe we simplify a little bit. But in terms of like the arc of the piece, I think it's hard for them to feel it unless they've been doing it for a long period of time. I've never had an editor for my work, but I feel like that would be really helpful.
Yeah, I used to have one friend. I called her my editor, but she was just a dancer that I trusted to look at my work as an outsider. She was always really great. She was just a friend that I would talk to, but she moved to Canada and we don't have as many conversations anymore. But I think for choreographers that make like larger scale works, there's dramaturgs that kind of sit with them. But I haven't had to use one yet. I'd be interested. I'd love to.
Yeah, I did a work for the New York Choreographic Institute, and that was the first and only time I got to work with a dramaturg. Mm. And it was very cool to have perspective from a person that has never seen my work. It's completely fresh. She has a completely fresh pair of eyes. And I thought that was extremely helpful because I didn't have an emotional attachment to her. I think that's really important. Kind of this like blank slate, because that's what I wish as a choreographer. I wish I could just put on a new set of eyes and start the day never seeing it before to see how I feel about it. But yeah, I think the dramaturg is pretty amazing. Yeah.
I think we have time for one or two more.
So, Kylie, we saw you last year at the piece that you did with Carolyn and the tent. So I remember the tent last year when it was really hot.
Oh, and, yeah, the open tent with the fans.
Yeah, the open tent with the fans. But we came and watched, and I have to say, even though it was really hot and everybody was sweating, I enjoyed the process in the sense that I like coming to listen to Michael talk about conversations on dance, because I think I've watched the dances that we see better because I've had the background of a little bit of what the whole process is. And what I really missed in that thing last year, I asked Damien if he could do it this year or something like it, was to have you talk first about the piece that you're working on and tell us the story of how you get to that place. And then go watch you work a little bit with the dancers.
Right.
And I tried to sell that to Damien. He didn't buy it, at least this year.
Maybe next year.
I'm pushing it again, because I really think this would be really powerful for those of us nerdy novices who'd like to understand more about what goes into the thing that we finally see at the end of this day.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, that's why I love up close. I think the open rehearsals, that's my favorite part to watch as an audience member. I love that back and forth. I can absolutely see what you mean. I understand, right? Like, you want to build this foundation so you have an idea of what you're getting prepared for. But sometimes when you watch a dance, like for this piece that I'm making this year, I think I want you to kind of go in, no, exactly. I think it depends on the work. Sometimes some knowledge is nice. And sometimes you just want to go in, just take a walk into a theater and kind of experience it. Mm-hmm. But I'll try to put in a good word and see if we maybe another open tent.
Any last? We can get two more. We can do two. Yeah. Bruce, go ahead.
Michael and Rebecca are fond of using a question or word at one time of what's your dream project. And then they say,
we dropped that. Yeah. Let's no bring
limits.
It back. Yeah.
No limits. As much money as you want, as much time as you want. And kind of, Jamar, you talking about time, I would think maybe if somebody said to you, you got 50 dancers in 6 months, that would be terrifying.
Yeah,
but
too many dancers.
What's the largest thing you'd like to do?
I don't know. I come from really humble beginnings, and I actually find it really struggled. I struggled to dream big just because I started making dance so small in such a small way. I don't know why I'm thinking about outer space.
Space ballet?
That makes no sense.
No, if it came to you, trust it.
Sorry, Jamar wants one dancer in 25 minutes.
25 minutes solo. Jamar's meditation on space.
I love it.
Cool, that was a terrible answer.
I don't have a question. I just wanted to express gratitude to both of you. I've been dancing since I was 2, not professionally. And to hear you share about those pinch points and those moments of breaking of where, you know, this is just so hard for those of us who get to see you either dance or dancers dance on behalf of you is such a gift every year. So please know that when you hit that wall, that there are those of us who still get to share that gift no matter how it turns out. And for that, I just want to thank both of you.
What a beautiful way to end it. Thank you so much for that. And thanks, Jamar and Kylie, for joining us. So tonight we'll see Jamar's work, tomorrow we'll see Kylie's, and then Monday we'll see both of them, and we'll see Kylie dance. So come every single time.
Thanks,
Michael. Thank you all so much.
Thank you.
Conversations on Dance is part of the Acast Creator Network. For more information,
hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Information, visit conversationsondancepod.com.